You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
To the Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, and I am here to help you stop counting calories, carbs, and fat grams so you can easily get to a healthy weight and get on with your life. That is what I am here for. That is my mission, is to help you wake up and think about your day, not your diet. If you would like to call in and talk with me today, the number is 323-203-0815. Again, 323-203-0815. I would love to hear what is on your mind, what is eating at you, because the real problem with binge eating, stress eating, any kind of emotional eating, the real problem, again, is not what you're eating, it's why. It's what's eating at you. And that is what I am here to help you with. Gia is saying that John Bradshaw's books helped her a lot. That's wonderful. I am in favor of anything that helps. Let's see, Debbie read Bradshaw before. And Renee, Maya went for a nice walk today. Renee always tries to find the gold nuggets in bad situations and focuses on what she can learn or be thankful for. Yeah, I mean, this is so awesome. It's so important to look at what's working in your life without disregarding what isn't working. Often we can get into a mode where we are nicely dismissive, where we say, oh, no, I need to look on the bright side. Right? Hey, I am all in favor of looking on the bright side, but not if there are also dark clouds. The problem with that is you ignore the bad, you focus on the good, but what happens to the bad? It just sort of festers and grows, and then you don't want to deal with it. And that's when people often turn to food to just escape the bad feelings. So my thought is, look at both. Recognize the bad, validate, acknowledge it, reassure yourself. It's not always going to be this way. You've been through bad stuff before. Hey, we all got through 2020. If we can get through 2020, we can get through anything, right? And also acknowledge the good. What is going on in your life that is good? What's working in your life? When we can look at that and focus on that, balance both, but really put more focus on the on what is working, we feel better. When we feel better, guess what? You don't need food to cope. See how easy that is? Not really. Debbie, I'm glad you're reading my book. Let me know if you have any questions. What do I recommend for intense healing at its core? Well, listen, it's not what you know consciously that is all, it's also the hidden things that are going on, the hidden reasons that you're in conflict, the hidden unconscious conflicts, pain, issues from the past, relationship to yourself that you're unaware of, out of your awareness, but not out of operation. And to Debbie's point, that is what I talk about, not to be completely self-promotional, but that's why I wrote the book, because I want people to be able to look at not just what they know, but what they don't know, the weed and the root. If we only pluck the weed, what happens? Yep, grows back. If we have to get to that root, and that root is underground, literally and figuratively in the dark, we can't see it, but we know it's there because it's causing this behavior. And so in my book, I give you strategies to figure out, you know, the why, what's eating at you, and help you find ways and then new strategies on how to cope with those human emotions, conflicts, relationships that can be so tough and we don't know how to deal with it. Oh, Debbie, I'm so glad you love my book so far. Yay, that makes me so happy. By the way, my book, The Binge Cure, 7 Steps to Outsmart Emotional Eating, is available on Amazon and on my website, drninainc.com. Okay, self-promotion is over. Let me get to some questions that I've had from people. Okay. How do I set goals that don't seem too big or too hard, but still give me something to strive for? All right. So often goals are I'm going to lose 10, 50, 100 pounds, or I'm going to go for that 2 mile walk every single day, or I'm going to do whatever it is. Now, here's the thing. When we set goals that are about behavior, often they are impossible to continue to adhere to. So what I suggest is setting goals that are not about behavior. For example, maybe, you want to set a goal of look in the mirror in the morning and find something that you like about yourself. Your physical self. I don't mean you're a good person. I know you're a good person. And people have often said to me, Dr. Nina, I know I'm a good person. Thinking that I'm a good person doesn't make me like my thighs better. Okay. So I'm talking only about finding something physical you like about yourself. Earlier today, a few minutes ago, I said we need to look at the good and the not so good. When it comes to physical appearance, I think it's really easy to look in the mirror and go, oh, I don't like this and I don't like that. And that's all you see. That's all you see. And then it can become magnified. I wrote about this in a recent Psychology Today article on Zoom dysmorphia. People just look in the mirror and then they look at themselves in Zoom and they only see what they don't like. And it becomes magnified and just horrible, and that they almost, you could see yourself in such a distorted way. But when you start looking at yourself and finding things you do like about your appearance, guess what? That gets easier and easier and easier. And then you look in the mirror and pretty soon you're seeing what you like instead of what you don't like. And guess what? When you look in the mirror and you see what you don't like, you feel bad. You feel terrible. You feel awful. When you feel awful and you don't have a way to make yourself feel better because you're used to attacking yourself instead of supporting yourself, that's when you can be vulnerable to using food to escape, to numb, to comfort, or whatever. When you look in the mirror and you get used to seeing what you like, you feel better. You feel good. You look in the mirror and you say, damn, I look good. Yes, I love me. And it may seem impossible, but as Nelson Mandela said, it is only impossible until it is done. So set a goal to look in the mirror and find something you like about your appearance. Do you like your eyes? Do you like your nose? Do you like your smile? Do you like your hair? Do you like your strong arms? Do you like, what is it you like? Focus on that. You're going to feel good. And when you feel good, you are less likely to use food to feel better because you already feel good. So you don't need it. See how that works? And also have some perspective. Now, when we make a change, it's kind of like Debbie likes her eyes and her hair. Awesome, Debbie. So Debbie on Instagram, every day I want you to look in the mirror and say, I like my eyes. I like my hair. Maybe find something else you like about yourself. Focus on that. It's just a better stance to take with yourself. When you talk to your friends and your friend says, oh, I don't like whatever they're talking about. I gained 10 pounds during COVID. Do you say, yeah, you really look like caca? No, you say, oh no, but you're so this. And you tell them all the things you like about their appearance. Be a friend to yourself. Practice makes progress. So when you make a change, remember, it takes time. Nobody wakes up and says, hey, I'm going to run a marathon. Or in Kylene's case, she's actually running a triathlon. Nobody wakes up and says, I'm going to run a marathon or a triathlon. And then they go out and they run 26 miles. Or they run and they bike and they swim and they do all the things that are involved in triathlons. No, you have to start small. You run a mile or a half a mile and you say, wow, I ran that half a mile. Good for me. You don't say, oh my God, I can't believe I didn't run 26 miles. because you would never expect yourself to get up and run 26 miles. So you applaud the baby steps that are taking you to where you want to go. Debbie is asking, why is it hard being nice to ourselves? She feels selfish. Okay, here's the thing. Selfish, here's what selfish sounds like. I don't care about you. It's all about me. That's selfish. I don't care about you. It's all about me. That's selfish. Selfish is not nice. Selfless, on the other hand, is, oh, I don't care about me. It's all about you. It's all about you. And often people get used to, especially women, we're often socialized, I hate to say it, to give up ourselves to take care of others, right? Oh, let me forget what I want or need. I'm going to help you. I'm going to take care of you. If it's either selfless or selfish, then anything concerning you feels selfish. But in the middle between selfish and selfless is self-care. And self-care is, hey, you know what? I'm going to consider my needs as well as yours. Sometimes I'm going to give up me to take care of you. And sometimes I'm going to do what's right for me. That is not selfish. That is self-care. Very important distinction. And here's how it relates with food. When you give up yourself constantly and it's all about taking care of other people, let me help you. Let me give up myself to take care of you. Let me sacrifice me to take care of you. Guess what happens? You deplete yourself. You empty yourself out. You give everything of you to other people. And then you're empty. And food takes care of you. You take care of other people. Food takes care of you. It's the only thing that comes in. It fills the emptiness. It fills the void. It's so symbolic. So that is why it's really important to practice self-care. You've probably heard the oxygen metaphor. So the oxygen mask metaphor is when you get on a plane and the flight attendants say, parents, if the oxygen masks drop, do not put them on your kids. Put them on yourself first. That is so vital because you know what? If you give away your oxygen, you're no good to anybody else. You will suffocate. You've got to give your oxygen to yourself so that you can help other people. You've got to give oxygen to yourself first. So, so important. Debbie, does that help? Does that answer? Yes, she says she's always put everyone first. You've been practicing self-care more. That's wonderful. So just remember that just because you feel selfish doesn't mean you are selfish. Feelings are not facts. If you've been sacrificing yourself to take care of other people your whole life, then as soon as you start taking care of yourself, it may feel selfish if it's either selfless or selfish. But feelings are not facts. And that's when you want to use your mind and really think about it. Wait a second. I feel selfish, but am I? If anyone else was in this situation, would I think that that person was being selfish? This is self-care. Self-care is so important. You are welcome, Debbie. Please let me know any other questions. I am happy to answer them from Debbie or Kylene or Maya or Sharon or anyone else who is here on Instagram with me. Or if you're listening on LA Talk Radio, please give me a call, 323-203-0815, if you would like to join the conversation. Let's see. Okay. How do I ask my friends and family to respect my food choices without having to stop seeing them and eating with them? I'm originally from Italy, and eating pasta and pizza to socialize is center stage. Saying no thanks could be seen as disrespectful or rejecting at times. Okay, great, great question. How do you say no without putting people off? All right, so as some of you may know, I am a huge Star Wars fan. So I came up with a little acronym based on Jedi. So check it out. Jedi. Jedi means do not justify, explain, or defend the I. I'm so proud of that one. I just love it. Jedi. Do not justify, explain, or defend the I. So you don't have, if people are criticizing your food choices, do not justify, do not explain, and do not defend yourself. Just say, I'm not into pizza. Well, maybe it's an explanation a little bit, but lightly. I don't feel like eating that right now. And then change the subject. Deflect, deflect, deflect. If people are saying, well, have some pizza. One little bite can't hurt. Why don't you have this? And you really don't want to have it. Just say, oh, no, thanks. So what have you been up to? Or just completely change the subject. Deflect. That is what I recommend. Or you could do it with humor, Or you can, whatever. Say you have celiac disease, whatever it is. I guess that's an explanation too. But deflecting is the way to deal with it. Do not feel like you've got to convince other people to agree with what your food choice is. You just get to eat what you want or not eat what you don't want to eat without having to go into a big, long explanation. So go out to dinner with your friends. And if they want to know what you're eating, you can also say, boy, you're so curious in what I'm, about what I'm eating. Wow. You're so interested in me. Oh my goodness. And then ask them a question about them or just say something else. Chia is saying, I'm shameful. I think that's another way of saying you feel shame. Yes, no, shame. Shame is one of the worst things that people can feel. Shame is a sense of there's something wrong with me, right? Guilt is, I ate too much ice cream or I ate too much whatever. I ate all the cookies. Oh, I feel so bad about that. I wish I hadn't eaten all of that. Shame is, I ate all the cookies. I ate this or I ate that. There's something wrong with me. So guilt references what you're doing. Shame references who you are. Shame is about who you are. And you learned that. Somehow you learned that. If you feel shame, if you feel a sense of shame, that is learned. No baby was ever born with a sense of shame. Babies become children who interpret things that happen to them as if there's something wrong with them. Here's the thing. If you're not getting good treatment, and that could mean a variety of things. If you feel bad in your childhood, and that could be because you're being abused, and that could be simply because you're not a good fit with your parents. It could mean so many different things. It could be you're an emotional person and your family is very stoic. And so you're seen as too much and too emotional and then you feel bad. Yes, shame is learned. When kids feel bad, kids do not have the wherewithal to say, wow, there is really something wrong with my parents. They just don't seem to be able to be emotionally attuned with me. Or there is something wrong with my parents. They are abusing me or they're allowing this abuse or something is like, what's their deal? Kids can't say that. And they can't say it anyway because it would be too horrible for kids to realize that the people who are there to take care of them for X number of years can't be trusted. So kids say, oh, what's wrong with me that they are treating me this way? That's the beginning of shame. And it provides hope. How does shame provide hope this early on? Because kids say, well, and again, it's not like they're going, well, it's often, an unconscious thought process. But essentially kids think, well, I'm being treated, I feel bad. I must deserve it. There must be something wrong with me that's making them treat me that way. If only I can figure out what makes me bad and become good, then they're going to treat me better. So it gives you the illusion of hope. If I can figure out what's wrong with me and make myself good, then people are going to treat me well. Awesome. Except here's the problem. There was never anything wrong with you to begin with. And so what happens is you grow up with the conviction that there is something wrong with you, i.e. shame. And that is where shame comes from. And you have to get rid of it. You have to deconstruct. So one foot in the present where you feel the shame and one foot in the past. Where does this shame originate from? How did you learn it? It is learned. It is learned. Like Janine is saying, shame is learned. So how did you learn it? What messages did you get about you? What messages did you get that made you feel bad? What happened to make you feel bad and then feel bad about yourself? If you could look at it and see how you interpreted those things as a child and reinterpret it from a different perspective as an adult and mourn what happened and mourn what didn't happen, because if you're treated badly, you've got to mourn that. And if you weren't treated well, you've got to mourn that you didn't get that. Both. Got to grieve what happened and grieve what didn't happen. And that's how you heal. And that's how you little by little chip away at that shame so you can free yourself and feel good about you. It is a process. It is something like running a marathon. It is it or learning to play the piano. Like no one ever just sits down at a piano and says, let me play Tchaikovsky. I feel swan-like. No, you have to learn what fingers go with what keys and practice and practice and practice. And, you know, what are those notes and how do they correspond to your fingers and the keys? And then you have to think and think and think and think and think. And one day you just sit down at the piano and you play. And that's the same process for changing your life. You have to go through a big thinking process. Why am I eating this? What's going on? What was just happening? How else can I respond to myself? What's happening? What's going on? How, what? A lot of thinking, a lot of hard work, but eventually it just becomes automatic and you no longer feel the bad feelings. You no longer feel shame. You just feel differently, you feel good. That's why I love the metaphor of Michelangelo. He was asked, how do you turn these great blocks of stone into statues? And he said, I do not turn the stone into statues. I free the statues from the stone. That is the work that I do as a psychoanalyst, as a coach. In my books, I help you chip away at what is keeping you stuck so that you can actually be free to be your authentic self, your real self, the real you that's been stuck all this time, all these years, stuck and not knowing a way out. You can chip away and you can free yourself by figuring out what is eating at you. How did you form this relationship with yourself? How else can you comfort yourself? Changing your relationship with food means making peace with you and changing your relationship with yourself, often with other people. And when that happens, everything with food also falls into place. Okay. There's this theme of positivity today. Positive, look on the bright side is how I started off. And this is a question. How do I change my inner voice to be positive? Well, to be more positive, you first have to look at where did the negative voice come from? And I don't know much about this person who wrote the question. I don't know if that negative voice is a shaming voice. So for example, if you think you have a negative voice, what do you mean by negative? Do you mean critical? Do you mean shameful? Do you mean, hostile? How are you talking to yourself? What do you mean by negative? If you're being judgmental and critical, where did you learn that? Maybe someone spoke to you in a critical and judgmental way and you internalized that and now you do it to yourself. Maybe you saw someone else being treated in a critical and judgmental way and you internalized that and treated yourself that way. Maybe, and here's the other way that people create an internal mean voice. One is when they're actually spoken to in a harsh, critical, judgmental way. The other reason people develop that hard inner voice is when things are too lax. They don't get enough boundaries or containment. There's no structure. When you know, things are too loosey-goosey. And when that happens, well, you need structure when you're a kid. And kids create the structure, but they create a really harsh structure, really harsh inner critic, inner judgment to keep a sense of containment, because boundaries make you feel safe. Kids don't usually create reasonable boundaries for themselves. They create unreasonable boundaries. So my suggestion would be, if you have a negative voice, what do you mean by negative? And where did you learn that? How did that negative voice come to be? Is it familiar? Who spoke to you that way? And then another way to identify the negative voice, the critical voice, the judgmental voice, is when do you talk to yourself from a perspective of second person? A lot of people will say, well, I just heard someone say this the other day. I'm going to change it slightly. This person said, oh, I was having such a good day. And then I saw these leftover Oreos and I don't even like Oreos. She said, but then I ate the whole thing of Oreos. And then I said to myself, this is her talking, what's wrong with you? You don't even like Oreos. You are such a pig. You suck. Oh my God. I can't believe you ate those Oreos. Now, this was all her inner dialogue. What happened? How did she go from I opened the pantry door and I saw the Oreos to you? Attack, attack, attack. You are such a pig. You this and you that. If you are talking to yourself in second person, as this person was, that is a sign of a mean voice. I suggest that you think about this and catch yourself talking in a mean voice to yourself. If you talk to yourself from a second person voice, switch it to I. I said, okay, wait a minute. Would you say that to yourself from a different first person perspective? Would you say, I am such a pig? And she couldn't say it. She was like when it was you, she said, you are such a pig in that tone. When I asked her to say it from an I place, she said, I am such a pig. That doesn't feel good. You know, she couldn't even say it. So if you are talking to yourself from second person voice, just listen to it. You'll catch it. Then try to see if you can come from a different perspective, and you will really see a difference when you get rid of that mean second person voice. Okay. How do I find the root cause of my binge eating? Well, this is such a perfect question for me, because this is exactly why I created my food mood formula. Right now, you don't know why you're turning to food, right? You just do it. That person didn't know why she went to Oreos. Yeah, she beat herself up for it afterwards, and she can change the mean voice to a more curious voice. Okay, what was going on with me? Be curious, not critical. What was going on with me? Why did I eat those Oreos? What purpose did that serve? Am I distracting from myself? Am I comforting myself? Is it the anticipation of deprivation? I should never eat Oreos, so therefore I'm going to eat them now. What was going on? But why was she eating the Oreos? That's the question. And that's the question that you have to start asking yourself. But if you don't have me there to say, okay, let's break this down. What was going on with you? What was going on in your mind? What do you do? How do you discern what's hidden from you? Because it's hidden. That's why I created the food mood formula. So in all the time that I have been seeing patients with eating disorders or coached people who had food issues, when they would come to me and they would say that they ate, say, ice cream, I realized that actually they didn't want ice cream. They wanted comfort. When they would say they ate a whole cake or they ate a bunch of hamburgers and or they ate something that really was filling and filled a void, that's what they were doing. They were symbolically filling a void. They were lonely. They were empty. There's something missing from their life, and they filled up on food symbolically. When they would say that they ate a whole bag of chips, well, that's because they were angry. And so I created my food mood formula to help people not only identify what is going on, why are you turning to that particular food, but what do you do instead? And so that is my food mood formula. By the way, if you would like to get my new food mood formula workbook, you can just head on over to my website, Dr. Nina Inc., drninainc.com, and you can sign up for my food mood formula workbook and do it. And, you know, let me know how it goes. Let me know what you think. But it will really help you identify the why, and the why is so important, because if you're always turning to ice cream and you need comfort, then you need to learn new ways of comforting yourself. If you're always filling up and with food that just you're feeling stuffed and sometimes you're in physical pain, then maybe there's a void in your life you need to look at. Maybe you're lonely. Maybe there's something missing from your life. Maybe there's some kind of internal emotional emptiness that needs your attention. And if it's something with a crunch and it's pretzels or chips or whatever, then you need to find a new way to express and respond to your anger. So check out my food mood formula on my website, and I think you're going to find it really helpful. It's also in my book. A longer version of it is in my book. How do I keep binge eating under control during perceived bad times? There's always something worse. How to build resilience step by step, one day at a time. Bad times. There's always something worse. Okay. Theodore Roosevelt said, comparison is the thief of joy. And when you say to yourself, oh, I'm going through this really rough time, but it could be worse, that is, again, being nicely dismissive. If you're dismissive of your pain or what you're going through, you never really resolve it. And you dismiss it. You can't just saying, well, someone has it worse or it could be worse, doesn't help you. If you break your wrist and someone else says to you, well, you know, it could be worse. You could have also broken your leg. It doesn't make the pain in your wrist any better. It actually just makes you feel bad for feeling bad. So you want to say, yeah, I broke my wrist. It could have been better. It could have been worse, but that doesn't make me feel better. You have to say, yeah, I broke my wrist and it hurts. Damn, it hurts. I once broke my wrist and I can tell you it hurts a lot. And yes, it could be worse, but that doesn't help. Say, yeah, it really does hurt. It is really painful. And now I have to acknowledge that. And then translate that to emotional pain. If something happens to you and you say your car breaks down, literally someone once said this to me. She got in a fender bender and was dealing with a very difficult person who hit her car, and it was creating all kinds of difficult feelings, and she had to like deal with this person and deal with insurance and deal with the garage and all this stuff. And then she said, but at least I have a car. I don't know why I'm upset. Really? Really? No, you get to have the feelings that you have about being in a fender bender. It doesn't matter that, you know, you're lucky to have a car. We are all of us lucky that we are not living in some part of Africa where there's famine and war and people are dying, you know, like flies from starvation. That's a false equivalency. It doesn't matter that they're horrible, horrific, awful situation should not make us dismiss the things that trouble us in our lives. What you're going through is real. If it affects you, it needs your attention, not your dismissiveness, not your condemnation, not your, I shouldn't feel this way, not it could be worse. That doesn't help because it's still an upsetting situation. So be upset. Be upset. And when you're upset, respond to yourself instead of dismissing it by saying it could have been worse. It's not so bad. Other people have it worse. Say, yeah, this is bad. This is bad. It's affecting me this way. I feel bad for the following reasons. Oh, caller on the line. Oh my gosh, I'm so bad at this. I just get in my head and I don't even look. Sorry, Sam. Josh, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Sorry to leave you literally hanging. I have got to be better at looking at my chat to see that you are there. So welcome.
Thank you. So I just wanted to let you know that, you know, how good I'm doing. I recently just sort of felt like my appetite completely went away, and I had to attribute that to you. And I realized that what really happened is the emotions were taken out of my eating habit. So I had that sort of realization that had occurred, and I wanted to share that with you and your listeners. And it's really, you know, due to the work that we've been doing. And again, it was just a feeling as though the emotions have dropped away from the eating. The eating was a place where I secretly hid my emotions. You can comment on that, but.
Well, first of all, Josh, I'm so happy to hear that. And, I find it very poetic what you just said. Eating was a way you were hiding your emotions. And now that you are able to recognize what is going, they were hidden from you. And now that you are recognizing what's eating at you, and you're able to presumably respond to yourself differently. I mean, I've definitely heard you call and talk about your internal state and your feelings and your thoughts in a different way. Isn't it amazing how that changes everything with food? By making peace with yourself, by being interested in yourself, by responding to yourself differently. Yeah, things with food are changing.
Yeah. Wait, what did you just say? What was the last thing you just said?
Basically, by responding to yourself differently, your thoughts, your emotions, your conflicts, your, you know, whatever's going on in within you, things with food are changing.
Yeah. Things with food are changing. I would say that the whole concept of emotions are changing too. So I would say that emotions have nothing to do with the act of eating, but for me, it certainly did. It certainly did have a lot to do with my eating. And I'm just thinking back about how that even started. It might have started from childhood, being like, well, I can't express these emotions out there, maybe in conversation, but when I'm eating, maybe my parents won't know that I'm upset, and I can hide my emotions in the eating process.
And from yourself,
yeah.
You know, because it also does something else, which it provides comfort. Our first experience of food is really when we're infants and being fed, and we experience the bond that like we're held in a parent's arms and we're safe and we're secure and we're loved and it's comforting and blissful. And that is associated with the experience of eating, of being fed. So on some level in our psyche, food equals relationship, it equals safety, it equals comfort. And that's important because you couldn't rely on other people to comfort you. So you comforted yourself in this way.
Yeah. And the reason why I was calling, I definitely had to mention that to you. But the reason I was calling is I wanted to know how our identities, and you talked about it a little bit, sort of how we think of ourselves as looking, but how specifically our identities can be sort of parsed out to the point where we know kind of who we are and not be fooled by what we're not. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, I can. Very, very interesting question. I could probably talk a lot about that. First of all, there's this idea that our self is the person we see in the mirror. I once had a patient who said to me that she was the queen of self-care and she could not understand why she didn't feel better since she took such good care of herself. And she said she got her nails done, she got massages, she got her hair blown out, she got, you know, everything you could possibly do. And she said, I take such good care of myself. Why do I feel bad? I said, you're not taking care of yourself. That's grooming. And that's not taking care of yourself. And she said, I think I said, well, that's just the person in the mirror. And she said, well, what other self is there? Now, that is an extreme example, but that is the idea that for some people, their self is just their bodies or the person that's being seen. Right. For other people, identity is about what we do. So interesting. I have friends in England, and they said when they go to America, it's so weird. Like the first thing that someone says to you is, you know, what do you do? And in England, apparently, like, you know, she said she's known friends for years. She doesn't even know what they do, which is also probably extreme. But that our identities are not just what we look like and what we do for a living, but some combination of, you know, that plus who we are, which is the most important thing to me. We are.
That really helps me. That really helps me. And maybe we can tie it into food, because it wasn't necessarily a food question. But I feel like if that's not straight, we could straighten it with food. In other words, we could, you know, eat or not eat, to try to uphold or destroy an identity that we would like to uphold or destroy, our own identity.
And when you say identity, what do you mean by identity?
Well, I'm trying to make it mean what you mean, which is what we do. I really like that. So I guess what I would try to do is, based on what I do, I would like to try to see if I can not have food be any way an obstruction or even a crutch, and I could just allow myself to do what I want to do in life, my highest aim, say, without having food be neither a help or a hindrance.
Yeah, and an identity is a multiple construct, but it's not, we're not just one thing. We have gender identity. We have, how we are in relationship to other people. You know, we have our sort of, cultural identity. We have our moral, ethical identity. We have so many different ways of thinking about who we are other than what we do or what we look like. So it's an identity is sort of multiple. We have multiple identities in a sense.
Yeah. But I like what you said first, which is the identity of what we do, you know, what we do for humanity. You know, obviously what you do for humanity is such a high thing. And I wouldn't want that to get lost in how other these seem to be minor identities compared to our highest identity about what we do to maybe help people, you know, or whatever.
Yes. That is, and when that is the thing that you value, the other things become less important. When that is the
other
thing
identity.
That you
value,
Yeah.
In other words, how we look becomes less important too.
Exactly.
Or how we think of ourselves as looking. Yeah.
And which is to say it's unimportant, it just becomes more secondary. Like instead of, I need to look a certain way in order to be deemed acceptable by society and myself, it's, you know what, I want to look a certain way because I like to, you know, I like fashion and I like red lipstick, and, you know, but that's not my identity. That's just something I like. My identity is, you know, my passion for spreading the gospel of psychoanalytic thought and a different way of thinking about food and eating disorders. So my identity as a mom, my identity as a wife, my identity as whatever, like multiple identities, but not just like a self is not just your physical manifestation of you.
Yeah. And so I think for all of us, our highest aim is our highest aim, and you could just be the highest aim with the person with the red lipstick. You know, it's not as if like these minor things should eclipse the overriding help of, say, helping people overcome food issues, as you clearly have done with me. And I'm not even sure it's spreading the gospel of psychoanalysis. I think it's just you. And who you are is definitely a piece with psychoanalysis, but I don't think it's psychoanalysis. I think it's you. But then the red lipstick would just be, the next day could be blue lipstick. You know, I mean, it's sort of just, it doesn't seem to be as important as maintaining, because red lipstick isn't going to get you, is not going to help anyone, if you will.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes. So, and too often we think of like the person I spoke of, we think of ourself as our, as what we look like. And that sells, you know, we sell ourselves so short by doing that because we are so much more than the people that we are in the mirror. And if your only self is the weight on the scale or the image in the mirror, you're missing out on not only a sense of self that's not only getting to know yourself and feeling good about yourself, but you miss out on life because, you know, you're too focused on things that are really to your detriment and not seeing the whole picture of you and truly living and not existing in life. We live.
Yeah.
We are embracing our full identity. We exist when we are trying to just be at a different number because that's going to make us feel good.
Right. And then food has a part to play in that because if we're using food, maybe we use food to either, like I said, uphold an identity or destroy it. I mean, sometimes we want to destroy an identity. Like you were saying, there's a voice inside of us that's negative. We certainly want to destroy that. Are we using food or not using food to destroy the voice in ourself that might be talking to us in a very, in a way that we're not aware of that could be slightly, you know, disheartening or whatever else?
Well, that is a very a provocative and interesting question. And I invite you to call me next week where we can talk more about that. Because unfortunately we are out of time. You have taken me to the end of the show, Josh. So thank you so much for for calling and for sharing your success. And I'm so happy to hear that. And I hope you'll call next week and we could talk more about this subject or anything else that is on your mind.
Okay. Thanks, Dr. Nina. Talk to you next time.
Okay. Bye, Josh.
And
thank you to everyone in Instagram who shared their thoughts and asked questions. And that is our show for today. Thank you for joining me here on the Dr. Nina Show. I'm here live every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific. You can also listen later on Apple Podcasts or anywhere where you get your podcasts. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss a thing. And if you want to get that food mood formula, head on over to my website, DrNinaInc.com, and get your free copy today. Have a great week, everyone. I'll see you next week. Bye for now.
You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.